Chapter 49, quote, "And the glory of Moab shall be condemned," end quote. Mortals must take up the cross if they would follow Christ and worship the Father, quote, "in spirit and in truth," end quote. Mary Baker Eddy, 1908. On March 30th, Adam Dickey wrote to Allison B. Stewart, "I return herewith the samples you sent to Mrs. Eddy of the new seal to be used on the covers of the different bindings of Science and Health. Our leader wishes me to thank you for your kindness and to say that she approves of the samples sent. You may go ahead and use them." The new seal made its first appearance on the cover of the journal. The April 1908 issue began Volume 26 of the Christian Science Journal with a new cover design, which included the newly designed Christian Science seal. Mrs. Eddy had known for over a year that the movement was not to have her personal guidance much longer. She also knew that the glory God had given to her cause would be condemned when she was no longer there listening for God's voice to direct every step. Her students had questioned every progressive step she had taken and constantly tried to have her make her revelations and directions from God conform to the opinions and usages of men. It was her absolute obedience to God alone that made the way glorious, but she had complied with the opinions of men at many times and on many points. Whether the, quote, "celestial crown," end quote, was one of those points is a question. But the new seal design seems to lack the glory of the previous seal. A great many students compared the two designs, and inquiries began pouring in, asking if there was significance to the new design, which made the cross appear so much larger. The cross in the new seal designed is slightly larger. The crown is considerably smaller, and the imperative demands are reduced in size. The significance of these points was left for the student to figure out for himself. Mrs. Eddy answered all the inquiries in these words through Archibald McClellan's article entitled "The Cross and the Crown," which was published in the Sentinel of May 30th. To those of our readers who have been searching for some hidden significance in the larger cross, we may say for their reassurance that the cross we are called upon to bear as Christian Scientists is no larger or heavier than heretofore. What we most need to impress upon our thought is that the crown has been brought nearer than ever through the ministry of Mrs. Eddy. The significance of the cross appearing to be larger could very well be the fact that Christian Scientists would soon have to start bearing the cross that the leader had been bearing for them all these years. At the time the Christian Scientists in Boston were working on the new seal, Michael Meehan completed and copyrighted his volume, Mrs. Eddy and the Late Suit in Equity. Following his recital of all the court proceedings, he included over 40 pages of editorial comment. Quote, "Because," as he wrote, "with the exception of very few papers in the entire world, they held, even in the light of their limited knowledge of the facts, that the proceedings instituted by best friends were without precedent in law, equity, morals, or civic responsibility," end quote. Meehan continues, "These unbiased utterances of wide-awake men go to show that as yet there is a widespread regard for the Constitution of the United States, wherein it guarantees to all religious liberty." They go to show that the civic ideals that urge reverence for age and womanhood must be maintained. Following are brief excerpts from one editorial Mr. Meehan included, which was from the Daily News, Pasadena, California. The widely heralded attack on the leader of the Christian Scientists has collapsed. Insincere movements are peculiarly subject to sudden collapse. For a long time, it was persistently rumored that Mrs. Eddy was dead and was being impersonated. When this very senseless piece of foolishness was exploded, and it was proven conclusively that Mrs. Eddy not only lived, but was in a remarkable state of preservation, alert, capable, and incisive, the malice which had inspired these silly stories turned elsewhere for means to embarrass her and her very remarkable following. Unfriendly newspapers bent to the work with a will, circulating all manner of evil reports, none of which seems to have been authentic, as has since been abundantly shown. McClure's magazine lent itself to the task and has been feeding its readers with fiction on this subject in serial form ever since. McClure's even presented what purported to be a picture of the revered leader of the Christian Scientists, which was not a picture of Mrs. Eddy at all, but a spurious reproduction of the photograph of another woman, which was fully proven. These next friends have simply been used. The real attack has been against Christian Science. It has ignominiously failed. This remarkable movement will stand or fall on its merits. The first copy of Michael Meehan's book, of the 5,000 published in the spring of 1908, was sent to Mrs. Eddy, who read it immediately. The next day she wrote to Mr. Meehan that she wished the book withheld from sale and circulation, adding, "You will render me a statement of all expenses to which you have been put. Make liberal allowance for those who have aided you in the work. Put a value upon your own time and service while engaged on it. And when you have done this, double the value you have placed on your own work, and double it again, and then send me the bill." This had been a costly book to publish, and in regard to Mrs. Eddy's instructions, Mr. Meehan wrote, "I did this, and as soon as a complete bill was rendered, she wrote out a check in full of account, amounting to many thousands of dollars." Early in April, the Sentinel announced a, quote, "new concordance to science and health," end quote, stating that, quote, "a complete concordance, revised from the latest edition of Science and Health, is now on the press and will be ready for delivery in a few days," end quote. When those few days had expired, Mrs. Eddy received the following letter, dated April 17th. "Beloved leader, will you kindly accept the enclosed copy of the new concordance as a slight token of love and gratitude from the Christian Scientists who have had the privilege and pleasure of compiling, proofreading, editing, and publishing it. Emma T. Houts, N. Florence Mellon, Laura C. Conant, Albert F. Conant, Ruth L. Ingalls, Louise C. Souther, Amanda A. Carey, Allison V. Stewart." Later issues of the Sentinel and Journal said of the new concordance, "Mrs. Eddy has said, quote, 'I have revised Science and Health only to give a clearer and fuller expression of its original meaning,'" end quote. Science and Health, page 361, and an eloquent testimony to the time and thought our leader has devoted to this labor of love is found in the fact that out of the 5,000 references added to the concordance, nearly 1,600 were required for new words, changes from the original text, accounting for the balance. On the 2nd of April, the President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt, had addressed the North Carolina Peace Society, commending their aims and also their stance for equipping, quote, the country with vessels and munitions of war to make splendid defense in case of attack, end quote. President Roosevelt said in his short speech, for peace, societies merely jeopardize the national welfare and are profoundly hostile to American national life if they obstruct the government in providing ample military and naval power to meet conditions in the actual world of today. Mrs. Eddy's brief statement entitled War, Miscellany, page 286, in the next issue of the Sentinel, supported the president in its closing paragraph. But she did not leave the issue there. In all the history of the world, no one had ever founded a greater peace movement than had the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. If those who called themselves Christians would follow the guidance of God's two witnesses on this planet, they could manifest peace on earth. The time had come for the leader to point this out to Christian Scientists, which she did with a bylaw amendment. The Promotion of Peace, Section 14. It shall be the duty of the members of the Mother Church and of its branch churches to promote peace on earth and goodwill toward men. But to do this, it is not needful to form organizations. Members of the Mother Church shall not hereafter become members of other societies except those specified in the Church Manual, but they shall strive to promote the welfare of all mankind by demonstrating the rules of divine love. A short time later, this bylaw became what is now Section 16 of Article 8, Manual, page 45. Augusta Stetson wrote on April 8th, and both her letter and Mrs. Eddy's response were published in the Sentinel. My precious leader and teacher, since you have moved into your new home, I have greatly desired to send you an expression of my love, but I have been unable to find anything which I thought would be pure and perfect enough to offer to my precious leader. Nothing I ever could get would express my deep love and loyalty and my ever-increasing gratitude to you. So I ceased my search and settled upon this flower holder, which I send to you, dearest, as a reminder of my affection for you and of nearly 24 years of your patient, unselfed watch care of me and mine. I trust it will speak to you of my constant appreciation of your Christly love for me and mine and all mankind, and of my earnest endeavor to continue to follow and obey your consecrated life and sublime teachings. My heart is overflowing with gratitude to God for such a leader and teacher and guide to eternal life. Ever your loving child, Augusta E. Stetson. My beloved student, your gift to me, a flower holder, is a dream of beauty. I thank you. God give you and your students the beauty of love in the highest, peace and goodwill to men. Lovingly, Mary B.G. Eddy. The leader's watch care of this beloved student was expressed the next week in this letter. Darling, a temptation is upon you, that is, to have a quarrel with Ann Dodge. I shall not take your side nor her side in this quarrel, but only God's side, namely, to love your friends and enemies. I shall not help nor hinder her forming a church, and you must not hinder if God is directing her, and if he is not, she will not prosper in whatever she does. The old malicious animal magnetism is trying to make discord between you and Miss Dodge. Disappoint it now. Be strong in your trust in God, and all will be well with you. Let me know if you get this letter. Note well. You prosper best by keeping your thoughts and your students' thoughts away from me, for then God fills my mind and shows me how to help you all. The leader wrote two more short letters to Augusta on that same day, April 15th. The first one said, My darling student, come and see me sometime. Let me know when. I want you to see your presents to me and how I have had them placed. With love unbounded, yours. The other letter was addressed to Mrs. Stetson and her students and said, Darlings, do not send me another thought or thing material. My treasures are spiritual and laid up in heaven. Shortly thereafter, she wrote to all Christian Scientists in this regard, but she did it in a new manner. Instead of publishing her note of thanks to the Dear Christian Scientists, Miscellany, page 274, in the Sentinel, she sent it to the Boston Herald for publication. It was then republished in the Sentinel of April 25th. Mrs. Eddy's nota bene on her April 15th letter to Augusta Stetson was a point she had to remind her students of again and again. She was constantly at work shutting out the world's thoughts about her, but her students' thoughts reached her and robbed her of God's thoughts. She wrote to Calvin Hill on April 24th, quote, Please keep your thoughts apart from me and accept my forever gratitude. End quote. This was a very difficult point for the students to grasp. They could not understand how or why she should suffer from their tender, loving thoughts. Those tender thoughts were the expression of good mortal mind. The students saw only the good. The leader felt the mortal mind. Good mortal thought can be likened to pleasure in matter, which is far more likely to keep one from spirituality than is pain in matter. On April 26th, the leader wrote to her coachman, Mr. Stevenson, my dear student, you do all that you do so well. I need not request anything further. But I noticed today that the spirit of Dolly so increased that it may give me some anxiety, for I rest on her to guard against princesses' spirits. So please keep Dolly calm, and all will go on as it has done. Well, affectionately, Eddie. On the day that Mrs. Eddy and Adolf Stevenson were concerned about Dolly in Boston, Edward A. Kimball was delivering a lecture to a large and appreciative audience in Southampton, England. Most likely, Mr. Kimball had visited Mrs. Eddy at her new home before he left on his European lecture tour, for he carried a message from the leader to the family of the late Earl of Dunmore. Mr. Kimball had lectured in Paris, France, on April 3rd, Zurich, Switzerland, on the 7th, and then at The Hague, Holland, 3 days later. The report of his lecture in London on April 13th said, Edward A. Kimball of Chicago delivered a lecture at Queen's Hall on April 13th. The hall has a seating capacity of about 3,000, and the lecture was announced for 8 o'clock. The doors were opened at 7:15, and in 15 minutes, nearly every seat was occupied. Half an hour later, the 9 entrances had to be closed, and a crowd of many hundreds turned away in spite of their punctual arrival, as not a seat was to be had in any part of the vast hall. Such an attendance in this, the most populous concert hall in London, is without precedent. One day in the spring of 1908, when Mr. Kimball was lecturing to appreciative audiences in England and Scotland, Mrs. Eddy called Mr. McClellan to Chestnut Hill. She said to her editor that she would like to have a daily newspaper started. Mr. McClellan objected to her idea and said that it could not be done. So the leader turned away and said no more. The date could have been May 3rd, for on that day she wrote a letter to Archibald McClellan and Alison B. Stewart, in which she said, The time has come when we must have a daily paper entitled Christian Science Monitor. Allow no hesitation or delay in this movement. I will loan you all the money I can raise to help do it. When I proposed having the weekly Sentinel, students held back at first. They may hold back this time, but I, in the name of God, direct you to do this. Answer me immediately. McClellan and Stewart did not answer her immediately, because this was one of the many letters which Mrs. Eddy wrote, but did not send. Mrs. Eddy was meeting the same resistance in Boston that she had encountered with every new step. But on the other side of the Atlantic, Mr. Kimball encountered a resistance to truth that was new to him. Mrs. Eddy published a letter in the Sentinel of May 2nd from a Christian Scientist in Pilot View, Dalkey, Ireland, who had taught Sunday school in branch churches in both Belfast and Dublin. She went on to say, quote, Though the Christian Scientists are not a very numerous body here as yet, they are very earnest in their wish to follow, even if but slowly, where you lead, knowing that you follow Christ. End quote. On Sunday afternoon, the 10th of May, Mr. Kimball delivered a lecture in Dublin, Ireland, which was reported as follows in the Daily Express of May 11th. Yesterday afternoon, Mr. Edward A. Kimball delivered an interesting address in the large hall of the ancient concert rooms on the subject of Christian Science. There was a large attendance. Mr. Walter Wilding, MRCS, MRCP, presided, and in introducing the lecturer, said the study and practice of medicine practically absorbed his time until he heard of Christian Science and actually witnessed the healing of several cases of organic diseases amongst his patients. One was the case of a cripple, and the surgeon in the infirmary advised that nothing would save the leg from amputation but an operation on the knee. The Christian Science treatment was tried, and the patient was healed. He had examined the limb the day before, And the day after, the cure and he could not doubt that a miracle had been performed, as no material power could have produced the result. This and other equally wonderful works, the result of prayer, convinced him of the efficacy of Christian Science, and there was only one outcome of that conviction. That was to cease practicing medicine. The next evening, Monday, May 11th, Mr. Kimball lectured at Belfast, Ireland, which was reported in the Boston Globe of May 13th. Belfast, Ireland. Edward Kimball of Boston, a Christian Scientist, lectured tonight in Exhibition Hall. A howling mob was present, largely composed of Queen's College medical students, who rushed the doors. By the use of drums, tin pans, and toy trumpets, they did their utmost to disturb the lecture. On being expelled from the building, they threw stones. Windows were smashed, and the platform was littered with missiles. Eventually, quiet was restored, and the lecture delivered. 3 years later, in the same location, Bliss Knapp had a similar experience before Belfast peaceably accepted Christian Science. Mr. Kimball delivered several more well-attended lectures in Scotland and England in May of 1908, before returning to the continent, where he lectured on May 26th to the largest audience ever assembled in Berlin, Germany, to hear a Christian Science lecture. The day before his last lecture in England, he wrote to Mrs. Eddy, Manchester, England, May 21st, 1908. Beloved teacher, I have hesitated to take any of your time, but it seems to me that you will be glad to hear what I can tell you about the status of the Christian Science movement in Great Britain. I had no idea it had taken on such large proportions and was so well known and so largely discussed. Moreover, I did not suppose the work was being so favorably presented and maintained by the Christian Scientists as I find to be the case. The characteristic sturdiness and earnestness and stability of the better class of people in these islands serve a very large purpose when these people become Christian Scientists. As a rule, they have a high and dignified appreciation of science itself and of what constitutes legitimate and effective practice. They have accomplished much over here, and the present situation and activity of our cause are full of great promise. The lectures are largely attended. Sometimes crowds of people are unable to gain entrance, and they have received quite as much and as respectful attention from the press as is given them in America. One of the great London religious papers has announced its intention to publish the lecture, which I am to give in London tomorrow night, in order that the readers of that paper and the people of that denomination, the Congregational, may have a statement of Christian Science from its advocate rather than from its opponent. The editor has stipulated that I am to speak of certain phases of the subject which he has named, and particularly that I shall tell them something about Mrs. Eddy. I think that this is the first instance of the kind in our history. No religious paper in America, other than our own, has ever published the full text of a Christian Science lecture. In this case, it is opportune, because there is to be a great meeting in June of the Church of England, and at that meeting, the delegates are to discuss Christian Science. A congregational minister said to me, quote, Mrs. Eddy has presented the only perfectly concatenated religious system in existence. If one accepts the premise, he must accept the conclusion. I am ready to accept the premise, because Christian Science is the only religion that gets God into the world, as or through his spiritual idea, instead of as a man. End quote. Tomorrow at St. James Chapel in London, we shall attend the christening of the grandson of the late Earl of Dunmore. This ceremony in behalf of a future peer of England, or rather Scotland, is of such importance that the King is to be present. With many good wishes for you, I am as ever lovingly yours in the kinship of immortal life. Edward A. Kimball. Mrs. Eddy had Mr. Kimball's letter published in the Sentinel of June 6th, followed by Mrs. Eddy's comment. 40 years ago, I said to a student, I can introduce Christian Science in England more readily than I can in America. Mary B.G. Eddy.